and restaurant booth instead with Boner Boss and Friends.
Mike, I'm barely recovered from episode 43 and all of the work that went into orchestrating a Polish orchestra to make the theme song. The now permanent theme song for All Holes Filled. How did you find the experience of working separately?
I thought it was pretty good, I guess. It was nice for those who don't know, and I don't know why you wouldn't know, but we really usually record these back to back. So we do 2 weeks of episodes back to back. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to not have to do it. We're still not doing it, so it's nice to not have to do that for a little while.
So good. We're done in a half hour no matter what tonight.
Yeah.
I was a little jealous because you picked two bands I would have wanted to talk about, but they weren't holes for either of us, so we never could do it, but you found a way.
Yeah.
You found a way to talk about Ink and Daggers.
Yeah, I luckily chose two guests that were like, why don't you pick a record for me? And I was like, well, okay, I'm just going to pick something I really love then.
Have you had any more beefers since we both beefered down?
No, I've had some more ideas. I think my next step is the Subway beefer, where I'm gonna get a foot long veggie and cheese, and then add some Subway or some Taco Bell beef to that.
You got to be careful. The guy from Empire got beaten up coming out of a Subway. Subway's a rough spot right now.
It is true. He also, not to get on very serious, depressing chat, but
yeah.
It was at 2 a.m. I had no idea there were 24-hour Subways.
I mean, I'm not going to be going to Subway at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
That's a dark time. I'm not going to go to Subway at 2 p.m., and I'm definitely not going at 2 a.m.
Yeah, if you're not going to Subway just to experiment and make beefers, just don't go to Subway ever.
One of our listeners did actually do the beefer challenge. Dave, I'm pretty sure it's the same Dave from the old days, Death Metal Drive Through, but there's several Daves with similar names. And I think he even goes by variations of his actual name. So I can never keep track, but I'm pretty confident he's the guy. He's been listening for a while, and he went to the KFC and he made himself a biscuit beefer.
Yeah.
And now I'm calling it that's the official 101 level of beefer challenge, and not to diminish his work. That's great, but it's just a good idea, and it's a small amount, and it's probably guaranteed to be delicious because it's like a greasy biscuit,
yeah,
which is awesome, filled with beef. So you're gonna have a good time, and no one's really gonna hassle you because half of KFCs are Taco Bells anyway. So it's a slam dunk. I hope you enjoyed it. Some people didn't have as great a time at Taco Bell this week, and everyone wanted to tell me about this one, is that, some guy brought a grenade, to Taco Bell. And depending on which article you read, it was either a guy or a couple. I'm going to go with a couple because that's more romantic. Like, and this is what I don't get. Maybe, this is a Florida story, of course, like all this kind of stuff, comes from Florida. They were magnet fishing. So first of all, I'm not exactly sure what magnet fishing is, but as a couple to be out there doing it, like, that sounds cool to me. Like, if you found someone who loves you and will go magnet fishing with you, I can't get anybody to do anything with me. Like, even normal stuff, like go to a movie or something like that. No one really wants to do stuff anymore. So if you can find someone who's like, yeah, man, I'll go out magnet fishing with you. Like, let's be in love. Like, that's beautiful. And, they brought the grenade to Taco Bell, and then that was where they called the cops. They went in to Taco Bell. Like, oh, wait, you know what we should do is we got to call the cops about the grenade in our car while we're here at Taco Bell, and brought a bomb squad to Taco Bell. And the bomb squad had to do the actual, like, Hurt Locker thing, blowing up a grenade at Taco Bell.
So magnet fishing, I just looked it up. It is what it sounds like. You just take a magnet and you throw it in the ocean and hope for the best, basically. You hope you get some copper to sell to, right. I don't know, for crack or whatever people sell copper for. But I thought this story was kind of ridiculous. I can't imagine that a bomb squad would really show up to do this. It was in the ocean for 100 years, or what was it, World War II era, was it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So not 100 years, but for a really long time, and it didn't go off. So I would imagine, like,
yeah,
a real, like, just one cop would show up and say, yeah, I'll take that, and just, he brings it somewhere.
I think they gotta. I think if you show up with anything, like unexploded ordnance,
I guess, like, so
they have to bring the guy, and he's got to blow it up just to be sure, because You never can tell. There was a whole article about the guy who was defusing nukes in the middle of America or something like that during the 60s. Like he's just some guy. He's like a guy in his 70s or 80s now or whatever. And he quietly was like airdropped into some, I don't even know where it was, like Minnesota, like the middle of America. We accidentally dropped two nukes. They were going to go off. So we were going to nuke the middle of the country, and there was no communication and nobody knew about it. So it was going to spark World War III. Like it was like no one would have known why the middle of the country got nuked. So this guy just was dropped into the swamp with his little team, and they just had to dig up a nuclear bomb with a Swiss Army knife and disarm it.
So I'm sorry, but I'm still looking up magnet fishing, and luckily I was hoping there would be many videos on YouTube, and it does seem there are many videos on YouTube. So I'm going to see what people normally find when they go magnet fishing, but I would assume finding grenades is probably pretty normal when you magnet fish.
It's better than what I like when they said magnet fishing, I was thinking like fish are so fucked now that you can drop a magnet in the water and pull one out, like mercury, you know, just like they're so full of lead and metal and mercury or whatever that. It's kind of like it feels like a cool like a TLC show or, you know, History Channel show hobby, like catfish noodling or something like that.
Yeah.
Magnet fishing. Magnet men. But I'm definitely going to watch a few magnet fishing YouTubes later and get, I want to get
Oh yeah,
to
me
it.
Too right after this.
That's probably way better than looking for shark teeth. Like people go to the beach and just look for, you know, shells and I'm bringing a fucking magnet with me. Next time I'm throwing it in the ocean. I'm going to pull back.
I imagine there's a lot of quiet days for you though, where you're not pulling up anything. And when I watch these videos, I'll have more insight, but I don't even know what your ultimate find would be.
The hubcaps just aren't biting this morning. I'm going to pack it in. This week, nacho fries came back. I don't really care. Except that I didn't really realize that they were putting out like giant budget movies every time they do it. Have you been watching these things? Like it's happened every time so far.
I saw the commercial. I didn't know there was more than one though.
Yeah. Well, no, like every time the fries come out, but because nobody watches commercials or TV, it's easy to miss these things. You have to, you know, basically read Ad Week or something to see a commercial now. And the first time they made this conspiracy movie where, you know, like some little girl asked her dad, why are there no fries?
Oh yeah.
Taco Bell,
yeah,
something
yeah.
Like that.
Okay, yeah.
And he went on the hunt and becomes like conspiracy. And then the next one, they actually shot the story of the franchise wars that led to Demolition Man. Like they made a little mini movie about that. And this time they're doing like an interstellar thing. Like all the fries on Earth have disappeared and some guy has to go into like a black hole to get them back or something. So that's neat. You know, I don't, that's really just pissing money away. Because people know that you got fries at Taco Bell, and it's the most plain thing in the world. And
yeah,
what is not plain though is that Thailand opened their first Taco Bell.
Cool,
and this is cool. Like I don't know how we'd ever do this, but Thailand is like no bullshit with that sauce. Like ship that sauce back to your coast and bring us something spicy. It doesn't work out. So everything looks the same. But they took all the vinegar out and they just made the packets of hot sauce, you know, four times spicier for the tough Thai. And the Thailand, the people of Thailand are digging it. They're like lining up around the block to go into this place. And there's like an awesome quote by some guy named Sasathorn Boom Prakorb. He says, I think it tastes better than Thai food.
Oh, wow. That's a new Taco Bell experiment, is put actual real hot sauce on tacos, because I've never done that before.
Yeah, if we have a listener who has access to Thailand, just get me like two packets. What could that be? That doesn't even need to go through customs.
And this is why people buy packets of hot sauce on eBay. Yeah. So here we are. Now we're gonna probably buy some Thailand Taco Bell hot sauce on eBay.
We're up the spice chain from some other country. There's some other country where it's just really bland, and they're eating their packets are gray. They don't even have any capsaicin in them.
Yeah.
And it's just the vinegar with no
That's probably
sauce.
Like England or something, because they don't like spice.
Yeah, they're just putting actual malt vinegar like they do on fish and chips or whatever. This is interesting. So, you know, like we've been talking about, this could be something for your retro food ghoul account. Taco Bell is selling shredded cheese. They're selling just shredded cheese in grocery stores.
Oh, wow.
I think it's very ordinary, but they made one that's Zesty Ranch. So you can have a totally disgusting sounding Zesty Ranch shredded cheese. Because to me, I mean, I know people like ranch. You probably, maybe you like ranch. I'm not going to make the judgment, but ranch, the flavor of ranch is kind of like sour.
Yeah.
You know, it's like sour dairy. So I don't want my fresh cheese to come pre, you know, like come with the funk of something that's gone off a little bit. I don't think that would be a value add.
I would just like to know if it's like the actual Taco Bell cheese and it doesn't melt like it's fake cheese.
Oh, right. It's little plastic shavings, like little rubber bands.
Because I don't see what the benefit of having that in your house would be.
It looks bigger. It looks big. It looks just like Sargento or the other cheese you get. It looks kind of like fat, like nothing Taco Bell's ever used. So you got an excellent delivery this week, and you got a hole to fill.
Yep, this week I decided to look on the internet to see if there was any Taco Bell branded records that were ever put out, because I know that's a thing that, as we discussed on the show, cigarette companies did, and I know Pizza Hut has like a good amount of records they've put out in the past. Mm-hmm. So I said, hey, let me look up Taco Bell. As far as I could tell, Taco Bell has only put out one vinyl record. It was Taco Bell Presents the Tijuana Taxi. This was put out by Mark Records in 1968, and it was a George Garbedian production. He was like the band leader, the George Garbedian band or something like that it was called. This was the only record that I could find, and it was a good price. There was one on Discogs that was like an affordable price, and then the rest of them were like, come on, man, I'm not gonna pay that for a novelty record. But so I grabbed this real quick, I kind of looked over the track listing before I bought it, but I didn't look too hard because I had just looking at the name Tijuana Taxi, I kind of assumed it was gonna be like a Herb Alpert deal where it's just like big band instrumental music. I did see a track called Lullaby Taco Bell, so I said at the worst that has to be a great song. So I
would have thought
it.
That, like, with Tijuana Taxi as a name, I kind of would have thought this was repurposed. Like, they found something and just said, oh, well, we'll just put this out as a Taco Bell item or something.
Yeah, that too. The only thing that led me to believe differently was the Lullaby Taco Bell song, because that is not a song anybody else would ever do. So I bought it. It came. It has a beautiful cover.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's racist because it's just Mexican dudes. Like, the 1968 kind of what all Americans, I assume, pictured what Mexican dudes look like, which is like the sombreros and the Bajas. There's one guy dressed like a mariachi. They're all playing guitars or horns, and they're chilling in front of the old-timey, the original version of Taco Bell, like the brick and the funky Taco Bell letters. And there's no signature on this, so I don't know who made this, but it's a very kind of the kind of like that Mad Magazine guy who did the fold-out pages, that kind of illustration.
Yeah.
And they're chilling in front of a fire pit, which if you turn to the back of the record, it has like a more formal illustration of Taco Bell as it is in the picture, the minds of white people, where it's just them, you know, at Taco Bell, milling around, eating. And there's also a fire pit in that. So that leads me to believe that a fire pit was at one point a trademark of Taco Bell.
Oh, man. Like, open. You think it was an open fire? Like, legit open fire?
That's what it looks like here. And that's, I want to imagine a world where Glenn Bell was like, look, we can franchise this thing, but the R1 trademark is an open fire pit. And I can't imagine, like, in 2019, if every Taco Bell you went to also included an open fire pit. Because it would be fucking great.
In the walkway. Like, you have to walk past a 5-foot wide fire pit because it's huge. It's really big.
Like, there's a, they just opened that's kind of a restaurant. It's a place called Big and Littles. It's kind of a chain here. Like, they have like four or five of them. It's been on Triple D, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. It's kind of just like college food. Like, they have giant burritos and just other that type of food. And they put a fire pit right in their front yard. So I could see it. Like, I could look out of my kitchen window and just see a fire pit. They unfortunately opened while it was too cold. So I haven't seen the fire pit lit yet, but yeah. Their whole thing is still surrounded by like a steel fence. And I'm still like, man, that's fucking dangerous, man. Like, it's just like a fire pit right there. Like a toddler could just walk in at some point and fall into that fire pit. So I'm looking forward to once it gets a little warmer out here and see some fire pit accidents in my future.
Toddlers can fuck off. Yes. This, by the way, this album cover is available at Retro Food Ghoul. It's in the Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really cool. Like, this drawing is so good. And the back definitely looks like if you're a franchisee and this is the pamphlet they would give you.
Yeah. I was hoping at very best that... I figured at very worst, I've seen the cover before I bought it. At very worst, I could frame this and hang it up. That's fine. I love this illustration. At very best, it could be something... where it had actual good music for us to put up on our YouTube channel, because this also does not exist on the internet.
Right.
Like much like the Luke Cigarettes 7-inch. Unfortunately, this is 99% Herb Alpert covers. you know, it's whipped cream, which if you're a younger version or a younger person out there listening to this, there was at one point in America, like probably 10 to 20 years ago, where you could not go to any place that sold records. If they had three records, one of them was going to be Herb Alpert's whipped cream. So yeah. I think that's been kind of phased out with my record shopping trips lately, but that was a thing at one point.
And then for the last, like for 10 years after that, it was a big thing to make parody covers.
Yes.
Like for your, there was some, I forget who it was, a pretty well-known band did Mashed Potatoes.
Oh yeah. So it's mostly Herb Alpert music. So if you've never heard it, it's just kind of, you know, big bandy, trumpet, shit like that. It's dumb. Even the things like 19 Cents for Holies, I think that was a Herb Alpert song too. The only non-Herb Alpert stuff is like a couple things from very time-specific Broadway musicals that no one remembers, like Mame. Like, no one remembers Mame. So it was a letdown music-wise, but... Even Lullaby Taco Bell, I can't place the song, but it's definitely a repurposed song. It's not anything that was originally written by this George Garbinian guy. before I read the back, though, I did do a little research because I wanted to research the record label because I was like, if they released this record, what else have they released?
Right.
And Mark Records, just in 1968, all they did was release Tijuana themed records for fast food restaurants. They did KFC's Tijuana Picnic. Oh, they did Pizza Inn Tijuana something else. I can't remember what it is. And there was another restaurant called, like, I don't know, like Route 66 or something. Like, it was someplace that died in the 60s. I've never heard of it. And so like in 1968, they released four or five records that were just basically this George Garbadian band covering Herb Alpert songs and putting them on vinyl for fast food places
to
sell.
We do one thing.
But then after that, like 1969, 1970, they just went back to putting out like surf records and like novelty records. Mm. I don't know what was going on in America in 1968. I don't know if that's when... I assume that's when Herb Alpert probably came out, and that's maybe what it was, because that record was so popular. But it's just, it's just like their whole discography for 1968 is that. Scott alluded to on the back of this, there's a kind of some, again, like if you were going to franchise a Taco Bell, some kind of verbiage, mm-hmm. get you pumped about this record and Taco Bell together. So I just wanted to read it. Your local franchise Taco Bell owner takes pleasure in making available for you this musical piñata, which might be a racist term, I'm not sure, a surprise package of fun and excitement, carefully blending the traditional mariachi flavor with the sound and beat of musical America. The success of such careful blending parallels the success story of Taco Bell, as proven by the overwhelming acceptance and growth of the organization and its franchise owners.
Overwhelming acceptance is my favorite phrase.
Taco Bell's five delicious food items, and then it lists what Taco Bell's only five items were at that time. So I'm just going to pause for a second so you guys at home can maybe think in your head what these five items could be. I'm sure Scott's reading along, so I can't really quiz him. But
if you've ever seen the I use it as album art a long time ago. I put Black Sabbath over the famous CCR photo of them sitting outside.
You
can see the menu, and it's real limited. I think the only thing that's not here is the chili, the burger's here too.
So the five items are a taco, of course, a tostada, which here it's called a tostado. I assume it's a tostada though.
Yeah,
that's a real weird one for me because it's not. I don't think a tostada has ever been popular with anybody. It's just a thing that exists. Yeah, they still sell them. Real Mexican places.
It's big with vegetarians because you don't have to ask for anything special. You can just get
them. Oh, yeah, that is true. I'm pretty sure real Mexican places sell them too, and I've never seen anybody order one.
It's a flat taco.
It's not open face.
It's an open face taco.
Taco, tostada, burrito, of course. Mm-hmm. Frijoles, which is just beans for you who don't understand Spanish. And the chili burger, which is would become the beefer at some point.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty good menu. I think, I don't know if it's this year, but I think at one point we're going to hit like peak level of food trends. And I think minimized menus like this is going to be a thing soon where a fast food place will open and they will have just five things like this. And it'll be a huge hit. You can mark my words on that. So. You're a franchising out there. You want to start your own fast food franchise. Get a hold of me because I'm telling you, five menu item, man, people are going to eat it up.
The fact that frijoles is one of the items is odd, though. Like if you go into Taco Bell now and ask them just for the beans, even they still kind of like look up at you for a second. Like, wait, you just want a cup of beans? Like, yeah, frijoles.
Okay, so the five items, taco, tostada, burrito, frijoles, and chili burger are as authentic as the piñata and the mariachi band. Yes,
the classic chili burger of Mexico.
Yes, as authentic and exciting as Mexico itself. The creative methods of making available to the public such authenticity is what makes Taco Bell the leader in its field. Whether you are a customer of long standing with Taco Bell or whether you obtain this album on your first visit, we value highly the opportunity to serve you and will continue to maintain the high standards of quality and service that every customer deserves. Enjoy this album. Enjoy the food. For it's our pleasure to make both available to you. Hasta que nos vemos.
I love how it ends, like almost reading like the plaque that's in the restroom. Like we strive to keep our restrooms clean and sanitary. Please let us know.
So I swore the back of this record talked more about how this music was authentic, but it didn't. So I'm glad because I don't think this was ever authentic Mexican music. It is very weird that, you know, that alludes that they sold this inside of Taco Bell's. And there's no, usually when they would do that, there would be like a hard price tag somewhere.
Right.
On the actual record cover. And there's not, there's a cheap insert in here. So they might have had like an original insert at some point. But I don't know if they gave this away or if this cost like $1.99 or something. But it's, you know, it's.
Oh, back then it was probably like 10 cents.
This is a cool promotional item. It's not as great as I hoped it would be, but the illustration makes up for it. I'm definitely gonna buy one of those IKEA frames and hang it up on the wall. But if you want to own this record too, or if you want to own any of these Mark records, the Taco Bell is the cheapest one. Even with the I grabbed like a super cheap one for $7. I think there's one on Discogs now for $11, but that KFC one goes for money for some reason. The cheapest one, the KFC one, is like $20, and I assume it's all the same songs that are on this, so you're not buying it for so much the songs as you are the cover, which it is cool. It's Colonel Sanders in a picnic situation, so it is a cool cover. But
I wonder if that also claims like the authenticity of Kentucky Fried Chicken to the Mexican sound.
I'm gonna cave in at some point and buy it. I'm gonna just kind of snipe it and wait for it because $20 is a little ridiculous for a novelty record, but. I'm gonna grab it at some point because I need to know now. I'm very curious about the KFC version.
So the segment that no one cares about that I launched last week, but I got to move forward with it. You know, Cognac Boss. Here we are. I got my Courvoisier, but you know, as we go, you know, I can't just sip the Courvoisier. I got to compare. So by the time we get like seven cognacs in, I'm gonna be taking seven shots. In the middle of the show, and you'll just hear me snoring for the remainder. You know, you ever smelled this stuff? It actually smells kind of like cherries.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take a little Hennessy sip first. Yeah, I remember that flavor. Yep. Did you record with Al since we did the Hennessy last time?
I think I did, but I didn't bring it up to him. I don't think.
Yeah, don't let him find out organically. If you ever, I don't even know if he listens to Border Boss, but if he ever does,
I think he listens off and on. I think he might have been one of the few people that was turned off by All Holes Filled because he is not a metal guy. So,
Well, the good thing about All Holes Filled was that it filled a hole. Like, we were only going every other week, so that's no excuse. You could just stay on the old schedule. And, you know. Okay, so this is Courvoisier, and they're both VS. Very special. And this leaves a little bit of a trail. That's better.
I don't think I've ever had actual Courvoisier. Is that the one that comes in the bag? No. The velvet.
That's
velvet
Crown bag. Royal. Crown Royal.
Oh, Crown Royal, yeah.
Is Crown Royal a cognac?
I believe so.
I got to know these things as cognac boss. Like, I can't be walking around not knowing. Maybe that will make that the next one, because that's pretty common. I'm going to work my way up to the Emperor's batch of a Douce or whatever it's called, the thing that has the Knights Templar sword on the front of it or whatever. But
Crown Royal is Canadian whiskey. Oh, finished in Crown Royal whiskey finished in cognac casks they have though.
Ooh, that might be a technicality. I want the bag. I want to keep my marbles and my Jacks in a liquor bag, so I'm the coolest kid. So this week, because we're out of ideas, we pilfered one from not only not just kissing contests, but just the internet, because it's basically a BuzzFeed article or something. We decided to just have a free form. Or I don't know if you went in order. If you made a numerical list, that's fine. But I'm kind of just free-forming it. That we're going to discuss fast food and restaurant situations in movies and TV. Like fictional. It could be, any work of fiction that includes some kind of, grubby level of food. Something below, an actual, not D'Orsay from American Psycho or something like that. This has got to be street-level food for the people. Did you find this an easy task to put together, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I'm always thinking about this stuff. Food stuff I'm always thinking about.
There's a couple I wanted to just back to. These are things that I didn't like or care about, but they sort of came up while I was thinking about this. And they're questions I have, because I don't think I've ever encountered this. So, one of the things I thought about was Wayne's World. Mm-hmm. He goes to Stan Makita's donut shop, where Al Bundy is the proprietor, and he talks about murdering a guy. I don't know if you remember this, but
yes.
It is wild. Like, it's crazy. Like, the place is swarming with, it's a donut shop. It's a donut shop, period. And there's 300 people in there, and it's social, and it's one of those Coke commercials or something where the guy walks around the party and everybody loves him and he's talking to everybody. Have you ever been in a place like this? Any place?
Well, first, I was under the impression, always I was under the impression that Stan Makita's is supposed to be a Tim Hortons, but no, I've never been to a place like that. There's a donut place here called Stan's, ironically enough, that is pretty hustling and bustling, but
yeah,
not like that.
I live in the land of Dunkin' Donuts, and no one's knocking down the doors to get into that place. Like that, sucks. I mean, a 24-hour joint is definitely always going to be a little bit better than other places in a small town or in a slow place.
Where they're in Michigan in Wayne's World, is that where it is? Aurora, yeah. Illinois.
Yeah.
So I could see that. I think I know California has a bigger kind of donut culture than we do, but
I don't think I've ever been in a place a restaurant. I guess Denny's in Albany is a 24-hour place, so that gets hopping at night. But I've never been in a restaurant where it's the place in town and everybody's there and you're going to see all the people and they're all living it up and going wild, and it's every night. That doesn't exist. I've never actually experienced that situation in my life.
You didn't? Did you hang out at Dunkin' Donuts with all your friends when you were in high school or anything like that?
No, the Albany one, the Lark Street one or whatever.
Anyone? That Lark Street one wasn't there when you were in high school. I don't think. I think that they built that when I moved there.
Oh, really? I thought that was there for a while, but no, we don't go to Dunkin' Donuts. People went to just wherever. This is an interesting mystery. I can't remember. Maybe someone knows what this is, that there was a very short-lived chain, and I always thought it was Cheesesteak Charlie or Beefsteak, because I was confusing it with Beefsteak Charlie.
Yeah.
I thought it was called Cheesesteak Charlie, and it was little tiny steak sandwiches. They were small, almost like those little hot dogs or whatever. They were like a slider of a steak, of a steak sandwich, and it had a kid's head as the logo. And I cannot for the life of me remember what this place was called, but I was so into that place. It was $1 for that little sandwich. And when I was 11, I was I'm going to bring a girl on a date here someday. It's going to be incredible. But I can't remember the name of it. So if that was a national chain, kind of a kid with a hat, I think. He had a sideways baseball hat, but it was a photo. I don't know.
And you're talking about like cheesesteak style.
Yeah, like they're like little cheesesteaks, like, and they're very, very plain. Just, you know, like steak them with, you know, cheese sauce poured.
I've recently found out that steak them is a very regional thing, and I didn't know that for my whole entire life. Yeah, because I've run into so many people where I say steak them as like a natural thing.
Yeah.
And they say, what's that? And I'm like, oh, you're not poor. Big deal. And then like, it's not a class thing. I found out it's just like a region thing. Like steak them is not a thing outside of the Northeast and in Philadelphia. And like, I guess the East Coast. Yeah.
I had no idea. I thought steak them was just like a hungry man or something like that.
Yeah, man, me too. Wow. But no, what I was getting at was, when I was in high school, and this was obviously pre-internet, You just hung out at Dunkin' Donuts on weekends, like like fucking Happy Days or some shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what we didn't have anything like that. There was no place that a lot of people were guaranteed to be that I can think of. It was like, you know, it was just, you were just spoiled for choice. People could be hanging out at the Ponderosa, or they could be hanging out at McDonald's. You know, we had Elkins, was like an outdoor, is a very very local outdoor. 50s style eatery that people went to a lot.
Two Northeast staples were Dunkin' Donuts and Friendly's. That's where everybody hung out in high school when I was in high school.
Wow. No. Like, there was a Friendly's in the mall, and you'd go there if you wanted to have like a really bad day. Like, you wanted to eat the big sundae and feel bad and walk around the mall. The other thing I wanted to know about, and this is a little bit less, more of a softball. It's kind of stupid. But, you know, Fraser, they always hung out at the Cafe Nervosa. And it was like, the thing that we all think about as like the 80s or the late 80s Seattle cafe, where it's kind of frou-frou and kind of like a little bit too full of itself and a little fancy. And like, I'm watching this thing, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense to me. I remember that, but I've never been in that. Have you ever been in that? Like, we all have that cliche in our brain, right? Of that kind of cafe.
I can't picture the Fraser one in my mind, but I've been to very many different style coffee shops, so I know it exists. Is it like kind of like Friends, like the place in Friends?
Yeah, where they give you the big mug, and you know,
there was a place in Albany actually that was, I felt, had that kind of vibe. I can't remember. It was like called like Doctor something or something like that, or like Mr.
Dr. Java. Yeah, Dr.
Yeah,
Java.
Yeah. I felt like that place kind of had that vibe, where it was kind of like a little rustic, but you know, they did that kind of style.
Aprons, but like artwork on the walls. But I mean, we have places that are kind of like in a descendant of that. You know, they're not the same thing. But this, like, that place seemed like it was supposed to be fancy. Like, you're supposed to be getting real actual espresso in little cups and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I never been to any place like that. So, do you want to go first? What is one of your?
Yeah, sure. My first one, I'm going to start out right off the bat with a big cop out. That might not actually even be correct, because it might exist in real life. I'm pretty positive it doesn't exist in real life.
Yeah,
but I'm going to say it anyways. First thing I thought about when Scott broached this topic was Smile Burger from a game, the Yakuza video game series, which is a video game series I've been playing since part 3, and they've released about 17 different games since part 3. And it's not been that long. It's been about 7 years, I think, I've been playing for. And the thing about these games is, so they released, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They just released part 6 last winter. But there's been like, you know, like spin-off games. There was Yakuza 0, which was like a prequel to all of it. And now they've been out so long, they started doing remakes of the first ones.
Oh.
So like, they're starting all over again. So right now they're on Yakuza Part 2 Remake. So basically, I've been playing these games for a long time. I've played them all at this point, because I've played the remakes. And the map in the game is pretty much, it takes place in a fictional prefecture or town or whatever it is in Japan. It's called like Kamachiro or something like that. I can't even remember. But it's a sort of open world game. But the thing is, since day one, the map for this town has pretty much stayed the same. So it's kind of like I've grown up with the stores inside of the Yakuza series. And Smile Burger is like the fast food, like McDonald's equivalent in the game. And if you guys aren't familiar, you know, you can walk into some stores. You have to eat food to get your energy back. And there's all different kinds of restaurants. There's like sushi places. There's like takoyaki stands. There's just like all different kinds of, you know, Japanese type stuff. But Smile Burger is like the fast food place. It's definitely not my favorite restaurant in the game, but I always wonder about it if it's real, and as far as I know, it's not real, so that makes it perfect for this list. Another big thing this game series has done for me is, and I've never really accomplished it, but there's a lot of whiskey bars in the game, yeah. And if you go and buy a whiskey, you also it's one of those games where you get drunk if you drink too much, and you're like wobbly and stuff like that too, mm-hmm. but if you like... If you buy a whiskey in the game, although the newer ones have kind of phased this out, but in some of the older ones, if you bought it, like they would give you this big long story about the whiskey and like why it's so expensive and stuff like that. And it made drinking whiskey to me seem so fucking cool. So, and then I was like, I gotta get Japanese whiskey. And for years, I've wanted Japanese whiskey, and now it's, I guess, like within the last couple of years, they've made it a little more easy to get Japanese whiskey in America. So now the only whiskey I buy for home is Japanese, just because. And actually, the last version, I didn't get it, but the last game, the collector series, which was like $100, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm never going to use it," came with like a whiskey set. Not actual whiskey, Whoa. But like a highball glass and like the mold to make those circular ice cubes and stuff like that. But nice. I unfortunately passed it up.
If you look at it, I'm looking at a little webpage about this. And it, first of all, there's an inaccessible one. There's yeah. one that is somewhere in the game, but I guess you can't get to it. So you think you can turn on God mode and go shopping at that one and get some... turn off clipping and get over there.
Yeah.
But also in one of the games, they expanded the menu wildly. And so there's one, like most of it's normal. It's just burgers. But yeah. there's one year where you could get a bitter melon burger. You could get a sea grape shake. You could get a fried pig ear. Yakuza 3, Ryukyu. That yeah. might be the one I play. Is that the one where you
open an orphanage? One. Yeah.
Okay, so I've played that one, so I could have had these burgers.
That's still my favorite one, even though it's kind of basic compared to the newer ones where you're like the remake they just put out part 2. I haven't gotten to it yet because I've just been backlogged with video games like a real winner, but they put in like a
I got a lot of video games I got to get to.
Yeah. This week. They put in a mini game where you have to that you play in the mini game one of those urinal games where you pee and like make a video game move like they yeah. had in like Bar Rescue.
Yeah.
And there's one of those in the game. I haven't found it yet. But there's all kinds of... There's, like, in one of them, there's, like, the chat rooms where you talk to a lady and try and get her to, like, take off her clothes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's if you guys have not played these games, man, they're fucking amazing.
okay, my first one. I thought maybe you might have this, but I have no idea. Mel's Diner from Alice.
That's a good one.
Mostly because, so this is odd. Like, I don't know if anybody else in the world ever cares about this, but I love chili. And if you go to a lot of diners, they'll have chili on the menu, but they won't give you chili because it's like seasonal or, you know, it's first come for whatever it is, just for whatever reason, it's everywhere. Coast to coast. I've been to a lot of places in this world. And if you go into a diner and chili is on the menu, you have maybe a 12% chance of getting that chili, but that's Mel's thing. Mel makes chili. He makes Mel's famous chili. And not only does he make chili and it's like it's known in the universe of the show, there's multiple episodes of Alice where his chili is the thing. Like someone tries to steal his recipe and his mom publishes his recipe like without asking him or something like that. It's part of the universe, like the Alice, the Mel's Diner and Alice restaurant universe. I'm very... into the idea of eating Mel's chili. Do you remember any of this from
Oh yeah, I definitely remember. I didn't have any kind of feelings toward it though. But I will say, to bring it back to modern times, since moving yeah. to Chicago, there is a very old restaurant here that I haven't been to because it's deep within like the south side of Chicago or like someplace where I would need a car. I've passed by it, but
yeah.
I haven't been inside of it, but it's been there for, I think, over 100 years. Mm-hmm. And it's called Lindy's, and it's Lindy's Chili and Ice Cream. And Whoa. that is the craziest combination ever. But, you know, I think when they opened it in the 20s or whatever it was, that was probably, like, a huge thing. Like, oh, man, I could get a bowl of chili and a bowl of ice cream at the same place? That's nuts. Yeah. Sign me up.
There must have been a machine. There was some machine that some guy was selling door-to-door that made both. But, you know, related to that, one of the things that I like, this is kind of... you know, extended outward. When you watch older movies about, you know, diners or, you know, the diner, like coffee, watching older, like I'm just from eighties and backwards, watching older things where people are drinking coffee and eating is extremely appetizing to me. I don't know what it is, but just something about the way that it seems when they're drinking the coffee. Cause I don't know if things have changed or what, but there's a scene in Poltergeist where like they're having work done in the house in the beginning and the guy's leaning in through the window and he's like, you know, you sure do make good coffee. Mrs. whatever her name is. And he's like dipping things in her coffee and eating her sauce with a spoon out of, you know, because the window's not finished yet or whatever. He's just leaning into the kitchen and helping himself to food. But the way that he eats, he's like this gross guy, but the way he eats the sauce and then dips something in a coffee and takes a big swig, it's like, man, I'm really hungry to do all those things right now. It's like a very powerful urge for me. So Mel, you know, the fact that whole show takes place in a place where people are 70s style drinking coffee, extremely appetizing for me.
What would always get me in old shows with coffee was when they had the old coffee machines where they would put the cup inside the vending machine and the stuff would come out. Because I never saw one of those in real life up until very recently.
Yeah, it's back.
If you ever go to the Cleveland train station, which is probably the saddest train station I've ever been to in my life, it's legitimately just like a room, and that's it. And they still, unfortunately, have vending machines from back then. I don't think anything's been touched in this train station since 1974. And I have a picture of one of those like vintage, actual, old-timey coffee vending machines, but I was too afraid to try and get coffee from it. Because seeing it in 2018, I'm just like, I don't want to try this. But.
Well, they're somebody brought them back because there's one at the Walmart near me. It's not classic looking. It's modern, touchscreen. So. But my oddly enough, one of those was in my dorm in college.
Oh, wow.
It was like a 60s or 70s. It looked the part. It had the old, you know, the retro font with the stars all around it and stuff like that. And it gave hot chocolate and coffee. But I was not into coffee back then, so I couldn't tell you.
My second one is, again, kind of a cop-out. This is actually from a movie, though. But you don't ever get to see the actual fast food restaurant inside of the movie. But it's something I've been obsessed with since I was a kid, so I can't not say it. And it's from The Jerk, and it's the cup of pizza he eats. And he says this cup of pizza is the best. It's it ran the old cup of pizza place right out of business. And I have been obsessed with the idea of cup of pizza since the first time I saw The Jerk when I was like 11 or 12 years old or whenever it was. And we kind of, America as a whole, kind of realized the cup of pizza dream about 10 or 12 years ago when it became a trend for about 6 months to open up pizza cone restaurants.
Right.
So that was kind of like cup of pizza, and I got one and it was gross, but it kind of quenched the itch for a cup of pizza, because it was kind of almost the exact taste I could imagine a cup of pizza being. But it's just one of those, it's like, it is probably my number one all time movie or television related fast food item that I would ask for if I could choose anything.
Yeah, like it, in my mind, I'm with you. Like, in my mind, I'm like, I could almost taste that. I could almost imagine, you know, it's got to be a little bit cheap. It's got to be a little bit, you know.
That's another retro food ghoul experiment. Make a cup of pizza, I guess.
But the thought of what it could be, like an actual just cup of marinara sauce inside of a like, so you have to get through the the process of eating a lot of marinara and cheese before you get
And the thing is, when you say cup of anything, it evokes cup of noodle in my head. So it evokes that kind of like fake dehydrated taste that cup of noodle has. So I would have to probably dehydrate the pizza and then rehydrate it to get it that proper taste.
Cup of noodle is another strong appetizer for me on screen. I don't even really care about, I mean, I'll eat them, they're fine, but when I watch, if there's any anime or whatever where they make cup noodles or like anything like that, that's vivid. I'm really like, man, I could just really go for a cup of noodles, especially if it's the old one, like the actual old top ramen, not the modern crazy, you know, all the things you can get now. There's cheap old top ramen.
There's a brand that's come up multiple times in the 5 Pound Munch YouTube show. It's like an English brand of cup of noodles. And I'm like, every time they bring it up, I'm like, I got to have those. And I've come across them in real life multiple times, but they're always in import stores and they're like, you know, $5 or $6 for basically what would be a 99-cent cup of noodles.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I can't do it, man. That's a fucking ridiculous price.
Yeah. I mean, even like when they used to have cup of soup when we were, I don't even know if they do anymore, but cup soup used to be like a thing. Like, and it was like for people on the go, I guess.
soup drinkers on the go, yeah.
Then drink a foam cup of soup on the subway or something. But so my next one is actually kind of a little galaxy of things. It's a little bit of a cheat, because one of the things, you know how these days any burger is complicated. Like, no, I'm not talking about the artsy ones that are stacked high, like it's like a meatball with like 90 different things on top of it. But just in general, a burger, the expectation of a burger is that you're going to see lettuce and tomatoes and things rip. And sandwiches are kind of the same way. They've become this thing. It's like there's no such thing as just the cheese sandwich, like two pieces of bread with cheese in the middle or anything. So when you see anything that's like a wimpy burger where it's just a bun, just like the actual, just nothing but the sandwich is like a really like lame hamburger, I love it. I really, really love it. And, you know, like for, like Barfy Burgers from New Canton on Television was a big one. And I know that they're supposed to be gross, but when I look at them, I'm like, those look fine. Those look delicious to me. Like that looks like a McDonald's burger with way too much onion on it. But the my favorite scene for this is a really odd one. It's from The Outsiders. You remember the movie The Outsiders?
Vaguely. It's not something that's, you know.
This wouldn't stick out for the average person, but for some reason they go to a Dairy Queen after they, you know, after they escape or whatever, you know, Dallas, you know, takes them out to a Dairy Queen and they're just driving around eating what seems to be like random barbecue pork on a bun. And they're not, and what I really also really like, this is another thing I could list these things over and over, but I really like it when people on camera don't seem to know how food works. So they just push their face into it or, you know, hold it oddly or do something. And that's what he does. He's like holding the burger and he's just kind of jamming his face in between the bun and just jamming it on his face and getting barbecues all over his face. Like, this looks so good to me. I want to ride around in a convertible, jamming my face in a barbecue, like a, just a barbecue burger on a bun. Same thing that the sheriff gets in Smokey and the Bandit. He orders a Diablo sandwich to go, and it's the same thing. I'm like, man, I could just eat like all like the whole 70s is just chock full of movies where people are just holding what looks like a bun and nothing apparently inside of it, and I'm super into that.
I am 1,000% down with this. When I travel to different places, I look for this. I look for these kind of old timey burgers.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I had like, you know, I have pictures and stuff of these kinds of burgers in my phone. I think the last like recently one I went to, and I can't fucking find it in my goddamn phone right now.
Yeah.
But it was like right outside of Cleveland, I think.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah, and it was just like, it was like a fucking burger that was probably like 8 inches in diameter and like, you know, like nail thin.
Yeah.
And it was just like all bun. And, you know, I'm just like, I can't remember how much it was, but it was very cheap. And I was just like, why is this burger only $2.50? And you get it. And you're just like, oh, cause, you have to eat several of them. Actually, another kind of burger like that is in Chicago. It's kind of a touristy spot. It's called Billy Goat Tavern. It's the original cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger. It's the original one they based that sketch off of.
That's perfect.
Now it's like this place, and the same thing. The bun was probably 10 times the size of the burger, and even when we got it, they were like, "You sure you just want one patty?" And we were like, "Yeah, that's fine." And when we got it, we understood why, but that's why when people always discuss things like what's better, Five Guys or In-N-Out, I'll always choose In-N-Out because they have more of that old timey, kind of sloppy burger, and that is my all-time favorite. I think also, if anybody's in New York City and you're looking for a cheap meal and you are also a burger enthusiast, wimpy burger enthusiast, there's a place just called Joe Jr. It's like one of those places that has somehow survived New York City just becoming just a corporate franchise, basically. Right. It's just like this old-timey place. It's like a tiny diner. It has, you know, fucking 10 seats. It's on 3rd Ave. In like, you know, pretty nice area. And they serve this burger and fries. It's like $5 or $6. And it's for that type of burger, it's probably top of the line.
Yeah.
And, you know, people swear by it. So, if you're ever visiting New York City, definitely check out Joe Jr. And also the sloppy burgers, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
I left this off my list, but I've always been curious about the loose meat sandwiches in Roseanne. Which is a problematic show now, but and that's a real thing. I don't think I've ever had one, but because I think it's definitely like a regional thing to this region that I live now. But I still haven't seen anybody that have like loose meat sandwiches on the thing. But when I was little and heard loose meat, I was like, man, well, that sounds delicious. It's probably just chunks of meat on a bun, and I think that's what it is. But
yeah, there's a bunch of restaurants in Roseanne. There's actually a couple articles about like because she worked at different ones, and they would go.
She worked at a diner in the mall.
Yeah. And then they end up at the one where I think the show ends when they eat at the Lanford lunchbox.
It's called. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that might be the place to lose me because there's a picture of the sister in front of not one, not two, but four troughs of loose meat. serving it up at the Lamp for Lunchbox.
If any listeners out there have ever had loose meat sandwiches, let me know. Let me know how they are.
I think it might just be a sloppy Joe, but I could be wrong. Like, to me, like when you say it and when I think of it, I think of like almost like steakum shredded up and marinated in something.
I kind of always assumed it was a sloppy Joe too, but I looked it up and I don't think it is. I mean, it looks like one when you Google loose meat sandwich, it looks like a sloppy Joe, but
yeah, I gotta know.
Yeah, I mean, even when you read it, it sounds like it's just a ground beef and a special combination of sauces that you're supposed to use. Like, it's supposed to have onions, pickles, and mustard or something, and that's what makes
it loose meat sandwich. Sounds even better. That sounds awesome.
It sounds great. So my last one is from an older movie from when I was a kid, but it's something I didn't notice in the movie until about 10 years ago. And plus, it's a wacky 80s movie that people like to reference, but I don't think anybody really sits down and watches it. It's Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
It's a movie people always reference, but no one's watching it because it's a shitty movie. Like, it's still, to this day, you watch Weekend at Bernie's and you're just like, how the fuck did this happen? and then it's just miraculous that they made a second one. Like, even the fact that they made Mannequin and Mannequin 2 makes more sense than Weekend at Bernie's. Weekend at Bernie's is just a ridiculous movie. But right in the beginning, the main character, who I think is the guy, is he? No, it's not the guy from Gremlins. He looks like the guy from Gremlins, though.
No, he's. I can't think of who he is.
He's in some other 80s movies, though. But right in the beginning, he takes a date to a scummy kind of, you know, just normal Chinese takeout spot. Mm-hmm. But it's called Jaime's Hunan because it's a kosher Chinese restaurant,
nice.
Chinese takeout spot. And I, you know, if I really thought about it, if I really sat down, that doesn't mean anything. Like, it just means they don't have pork there. But in my mind, I've since like 10 years ago, since I've noticed this, I've just been like, man, I wish that existed so bad. I wish that was like something I could go to, like a real dirty, normal Chinese spot, but this specializes in kosher foods. That might be wild because there, of course, when I lived in Brooklyn, there's a million places of white people opening these restaurants that are just stupid ideas. So yeah. I've been to, there was a ramen place in Brooklyn. I assume it's not there anymore because it's such a stupid fucking idea, but it was a ramen place that actually had Jewish influences. Mm. So like I had like a bowl of ramen that had like a matzo ball in it and just like, this is fucking dumb. So, but it's not authentic. Like if I was in Japan and somebody had like a kosher ramen spot, I'd be like, man, that is fucking wild. So the idea of having like a dingy Chinese takeout spot that also specialized in kosher foods just has intrigued me since noticing that scene.
I'm super into it, and I'm super easy on fictional Chinese food.
Yeah.
I've had plenty of Chinese food in my life, but I've never eaten, you know, I've never ordered the takeout and had it in a box and sat there eating it with chopsticks, like while discussing, you know, ghost busting ghosts or whatever, you know. I've never done that. I've basically just gone, you know, I don't know, eaten it another way. But when I see it, I could picture, you know, lo mein noodles and stuff like that. And it's quick. Like it's a very quick circuit between seeing that and feeling it in my body. And we I don't know. I think this was everywhere, right? Like everywhere on Earth, all of a sudden, Chinese restaurants started experimenting with other cuisine and opening like Chimex restaurants and like things like that. And I think I told this story to human beings, but I don't know if I ever told it on Border Boss, but I went to the Chinese food court. It was a food court in the corner of Lark Street.
Yeah.
And it was just one counter and it was just one family and probably two woks, but it was, you know, in quote unquote, they put up three different signs to make it look like you could order from three different menus. And they were surly. they were surly people at this place. And they were not having your shit for anything. And I went there with my friend once on like St. Patrick's Day or something like that. And they were empty. And I ordered the Mexican food, as you do, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. And they gave me one of those gigantic Tupperware, you know, the big tall Tupperware cups with like an aborted fetus in it or something. Like, I don't know. I ordered Mexican soup and it was just like a hand or organs or something floating in broth. No rice, no tortillas, no nothing like that. I don't know what the point of this thing was. And then they gave me a styrofoam plate with like corn chips on it, and they had put gray guacamole, like gray like cement, and and laid a slice of American cheese on top of it. And you know, I'm kind of shy about stuff like that. I'm not gonna like square off with somebody right away. So I took it back to my table, like maybe I can make this work. Maybe this is better than it looks. Maybe this is gonna work. I couldn't. I put it in my mouth. It was ice cold. It was gray. Like, and I walked up and I said, you know, the cheese is at least supposed to be melted on this. She lost it.
Yeah, that place opened right after I moved to Albany, and that place taught me a lot about food. Where. Yeah. In my mind, when it opened, I was like, this has all three foods. It has Mexican, Chinese, and Japanese in the same place. This is amazing. And that's where I learned that if you go to any Asian place and they have a different kind of Asian food, it's not good. Not one of those things is going to be awful, and the other thing might be passable.
Yeah, there was actually a really good one. I think it was in Latham. It was called just Central Taco.
Yeah.
It was a Central Taco, but they also had the Hong Kong Bakery, and the Hong Kong Bakery was next level. Like, this was, you know, one of those places where they have all the Pokemon cakes and stuff like that. And it was, like, that part was beyond incredible. I couldn't believe all the things I was looking at that were just sitting out. I'm like, what happens to these? Because I don't see thousands of people coming in to buy this thing. Like, these just go in the trash.
That is another Chicago thing, is that a lot of the Chinese restaurants here have been around since back in the day. So a lot of them still have chop suey in their names. And it's like, it's much like movies and seeing movies like that. It makes me want to go to them, but I know I'm going to just get in there and be very disappointed. But I'm just like, man, that place, you know, it's been there for 100 years probably. And it's called chop suey. But for you guys who somehow don't know this, chop suey is garbage food. It's not good. So I don't know. They probably don't even serve chop suey anymore.
Yeah. I have a last one, then I have a couple of just like honorable mention things that I want to get off my chest. I just want to talk about some other ones.
Okay.
But my last one is basically the entire movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High. that whole movie is basically about food. Like, you know, they're teens, they work at malls and stuff like that, and they all have, you know, shitty jobs. There are so many 70s, because it's, you know, it's early 80s, so it's basically the 70s. So many 70s food situations in that, and it really gets my appetite up. And it goes all the way, you know, the girls work at a pizza place. And every time you see them working on the cheap pizza, that gets me. There's a guy who returns his gnarly breakfast, like his McDonald's breakfast sucked, and he brings it back up and they show the breakfast. I'm like, that looks good. That looks so good. It looks like a cheap McDonald's breakfast platter from 1974 or something like that. I want that really bad. They go to a German restaurant and everything they eat at the German restaurant looks incredible to me. Including when the cool dude walks over to talk to him and he picks up some sort of a pepper and bites into it and it squirts all over the table. Like, man, I don't know what, I didn't know Germans had squirting peppers. I want to know more about that. And then, you know, like towards the end, you know, Judge Reinhold is driving around delivering fish for like a Long John Silver's type place. It looks so good.
I remember, a lot of Fast Times took place in a food court, and it was like a very ideal food court that I guess actually did exist in California, but we did not have those types of food courts. Well, at least I didn't where we grew up. Like, the Crossgates food court's kind of nice, but it's still, you know, pretty East Coast still. The one in Fast Times is like, you would like really want to go there, even though when you're a teen, you want to go to the food court anyways. But the Fast Times one was really nice.
Yeah, and they used to be sort of like expansive and all tiled nicely, and it was kind of you know, it was like there'd be palm trees and, you know, plants and stuff like that, and it'd be very inviting. And there was, I think that there was a window of time between when the food court literally just meant that there was like a burger place and a pizza place, to the part that almost is what I thought of when you said cup of pizza, where all of a sudden trends would happen and there'd be competitive, like, there'd be two different, you know, corn dog places competing or something like that. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, there'd just be all, like a whole little explosion of people trying the same exact strange little trend with really good branding. One Potato Two was ours.
Was that a potato place?
Yeah, it was just like just baked potatoes. That's all they served was, you know, like the Wendy's baked potato, but expanded to a full menu.
Man, that is a trend that is stuck in the 80s, I think.
Yeah, I don't think
that left the 80s.
The Atkins and low carb revolution destroyed the One Potato Two franchise.
Also, just before I forget, and this episode wraps up, I just wanted to, I looked it up. The Wimpy Burger place in Ohio I was talking about was called Bearden's. It's basically Bear Den is one word, and it's in Rocky River, Ohio. And if you want the ultimate Wimpy Burger, go there. They also have one that has peanut butter on it for no inexplicable reason. Yeah. But it's I really love that place. That is the most old-timey TV show burger place I've ever eaten at. So if you're enjoying the things we're talking about and you are in the that kind of Ohio area near Cleveland, definitely check that place out.
Hopefully all these places last maybe 17, 18 years. So when I send my daughter off to college, I can just go on tour by like probably by myself.
Get a Winnebago and just go on the burger tour.
Drive around eating wimpy burgers, eating dollar burgers. The most important thing that I wanted to talk about, but it doesn't really count because it's not like the food there didn't look that appealing to me, was Johnny's Fat Boys Burgers from Midnight Madness.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This place is very confusing.
Yeah.
It's called Johnny's Fat Boy Burgers, and it's not real, but it's based on something real, right?
Bob's Big Boy.
Oh, Bob's Big Boy. Okay. So there's a real thing. And a Bob's Big Boy, I would think, is like an In-N-Out or like a burger place, right?
Yeah, it is.
This is not. This is just some sort of anything goes diner where, in addition to everything else odd that happens there, you can order a plate of melons.
Yeah, that's what always brings me out of this place is that when she brings the melons, I'm like, come on, fuck off. This will never happen anywhere. The one I just I didn't mention on purpose because it would probably be a lot of people's top pick, of course, is Ziggy Piggy from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh yeah,
this is probably the first thing in my life outside of Stand By Me that put the idea of kind of competitive eating in my head, where you can actually go to a place and order some ridiculous item, and you would have to eat it right there. I'm pretty sure this is outside of Stand By Me, where they have a pie eating contest, which doesn't really count, but I think this is the first movie I've seen that did something like that. And Ben and Jerry's really has something like that, but you're not supposed to eat it just by yourself.
Vermonster.
You're supposed to eat that with other people. So Ziggy Piggy always rings true in my heart. And the other one is a cartoon. It's Sugarfoot's, the barbecue restaurant from King of the Hill that Hank's boss owns, but it's a cartoon. And outside of Chicken Legs and He-Man, and Wimpy Burgers, I just can't really get down cartoon food too much.
Yeah, I can't even think of it. Well, you know, I don't think I can think of any of that. I mean, Bob's Burgers is fine. But
and, you know, people have done that. They've made the like the weird recipes he has on the back of the thing. And that's never been a thing for me where I'm like, oh, I gotta try that out. It just, I don't know, it doesn't resonate with me. But I've said this on Kissing Contest, though, but when they eat those giant turkey legs and fucking old cartoons, man, that always got me.
I'm good with the old turkey leg, and I'm good with the big sandwich. So Shaggy or Dagwood or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's never anything you'd want to eat. It's like a bun with 18 layers of lettuce in the middle, nothing else. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And here's something. Here's a mystery that I can't – this is dumb, all right? This is a mystery. But there's a scene somewhere in a movie that I've watched a lot, so it had to have been popular, where a character grabs like a whole sub – and like jams in his mouth and a huge ball of like lettuce falls out of it. And he's supposed to be a gross person, but the image of like the big ball of lettuce falling out, you know, it's almost like Rodney Dangerfield when he makes his sandwich out of hors d'oeuvres and Back to School. Like that's a pretty gross scene too. And he actually takes it out of his mouth and then shakes hands with the person. But if anybody can help me identify a movie where a character bites into a submarine sandwich and a ball of lettuce falls out, the Border Boss RIP. On Twitter and Instagram. Border Boss and Friends!